trying to keep his life private. Sounds like we might have to do something to change that. I was two steps ahead of V, leading the way out, and I came up short. I just experienced a flash of inspiration. I have a great idea, I said, turning around. Why don't you give Scott the tour? No, seriously, V, you'll love him. He has that reckless, anti-rules, bad boy attitude. He even asked if we had beer. Scandalous, right? I think he's right up your alley. No can do. I've got a lunch date with Rickson. I felt an unexpected stab in the vicinity of my heart. Patch and I had lunch plans today, too, but somehow I doubted they were happening. What had I done? I had to call him. I had to find a way to talk to him. I wasn't going to end things like this. It was absurd. But a small voice that I despised questioned why he hadn't called first. He had just as much to apologize for as I did. I'll pay you $8.32 to take Scott around. Final offer, I said. Tempting, but no. And here's another thing. Patch probably isn't going to be a happy camper if you and Scott make a habit of this exclusive time. Don't get me wrong, I couldn't care less what Patch thinks. And if you want to drive him crazy, more power to you. Still, I thought I'd raise the point. I was halfway down the front porch steps and my footing slipped at the mention of Patch. I thought about telling V that I'd called things off, but I wasn't ready to say it out loud. I felt my cell phone with Patch's pictures saved on it, burning in my pocket. Part of me wanted to hurl the phone into the trees on the far side of the road. Part of me couldn't lose him that quickly. Besides, if I told V, she'd inevitably point out that a breakup made us free to date other people, which was the wrong conclusion. I wasn't looking elsewhere, and neither was Patch. I hoped. This was just a snag. Our first real fight. The breakup wasn't permanent. Caught up in the moment, we'd both said things we didn't mean. If I were you, I'd bail, V said, her 4-inch heels stabbing down the steps behind me. That's what I do whenever I find myself in a jam. Call Scott and tell him your cat's coughing up mice intestines, and you have to take it to the vet after school. He was over here last night. He knows I don't have a cat. Then unless he's got overcooked spaghetti for brains, he'll figure out you're not interested. I considered this. If I got out of giving Scott a tour of town, maybe I could borrow V's car and follow him. Try as I might to rationalize what I'd heard last night, I couldn't ignore the nagging suspicion that Scott had spoken to his mom's thoughts. 1 year ago, I would have brushed the idea off as ridiculous. But things were different now. Patch had spoken to my thoughts numerous times. So had Chauncey, a.k.a. Jules, and Nafiel from my past. Since Fallen Angels didn't age, and I'd known Scott since he was 5, I'd already ruled that out. But even if Scott wasn't a Fallen Angel, he could still be Nephilim. But if he was Nephilim, what was he doing in Coldwater? What was he doing living an ordinary teen life? Did he know he was Nephilim? Did Lynn? Had Scott sworn fealty to a Fallen Angel yet? If he hadn't, was it my responsibility to warn him about what lay ahead? I hadn't instantly hit it off with Scott, but that didn't mean I thought he deserved to give up his body for 2 weeks every year. Of course, maybe he wasn't Nephilim at all. Maybe I was getting carried away with the imagined belief that I'd overheard him speak to his mom's thoughts. After chemistry, I swung by my locker, traded out my textbook for my backpack and cell, then walked to the side doors offering a clear view of the student parking lot. Scott was sitting on the hood of his silver-blue Mustang. He was still wearing the Hawaiian hat, and it dawned on me that if he kept this up, I wouldn't recognize him without it. Case in point, I didn't even know his hair color. I pulled the post-it note my mom had left for me out of my pocket and dialed his number.
"This must be Nora Gray," he answered. "I hope you're not ditching me."
"Bad news. My cat's sick. The vet squeezed me in for a 12:30 appointment. I'm going to have to take a rain check on the tour. Sorry," I finished, not expecting to feel quite this guilty. After all, it was just a little lie, and not one part of me honestly believed that Scott wanted a tour of Coldwater. At least, that's what I was telling myself to ease my conscience.
"Right," Scott said, and broke the connection.
I'd only just closed my cell phone when V came up behind me. "Let him down easy. That's my girl." "Do you mind if I borrow the Neon for the afternoon?" I asked, watching Scott slide off the Mustang and place a call on his cell. "What's the occasion?" "I want to tail Scott. What for? This morning you made it pretty clear you think he's a bottom feeder.
Something about him is off.
Yeah, it's called his sunglasses. Hulk Hogan, anyone? Either way, no can do. I have my lunch date with Rixon.
Yeah, but Rixon could give you a ride so I can have the neon, I said, shooting a glance through the window to confirm that Scott hadn't hopped inside the Mustang yet. I didn't want him leaving before I convinced V to hand over the neon's keys.
Of course he can. But then I'd look needy. Guys today want a strong, independent woman.
If you let me take the neon, I'll fill up the tank. V's expression softened just a tad.
All the way?
All the way. Or as much as $8.32 would buy. V chewed her lip.
Okay, she said slowly. But maybe I should come along and keep you company. Make sure nothing bad happens.
What about Rixon?
Just because I've gone and snagged myself a hot boyfriend doesn't mean I'm going to leave my best friend high and dry. Besides, I have a feeling you're going to need my help.
Nothing bad is going to happen. I'm tailing him. He's not going to know I'm there. But I appreciated the offer. The past few months had changed me. I wasn't as naive and heedless as I'd once been, and taking V along appealed to me on more than one level, especially if Scott was Nephilim. The only other Nephil I'd known had tried to kill me. After V called Rixon and canceled, we waited until Scott had angled himself behind the steering wheel and backed out of his parking space before we exited the building. He turned left out of the parking lot, and V and I raced for her 1995 purple Dodge Neon.
You drive, V said, tossing me the keys.
A handful of minutes later, we caught up to the Mustang, and I hung three cars back. Scott got on the highway, heading east toward the coast, and I followed. A half hour later, Scott exited at the pier and steered into a parking lot at the edge of the strip of shops leading out to the ocean. I drove slower, allowing him time to lock the doors and walk away, then parked two rows over.
Looks like Scotty the Potty is going shopping, V said. Speaking of shopping, you don't mind if I have a look around while you run amateur hour surveillance?
Rixon said he likes it when girls accessorize with scarves,
and my wardrobe is clean out of scarves.
Go for it. Staying a half block behind Scott, I watched him walk into a trendy clothing store and exit less than 15 minutes later with a shopping bag. He went into another store and came out 10 minutes later. Nothing out of the ordinary, and nothing that made me think he could be Nephilim. After a third store, Scott's attention was drawn toward a group of college-age girls eating lunch across the street. They sat at an umbrella table on the restaurant's outdoor terrace, wearing cutoffs and bikini tops. Scott pulled out his camera phone and clicked a few candid pictures. I turned to Grimace in the plate glass window of the coffee shop beside me, and that was when I saw him sitting at a booth inside. He was dressed in khakis, a blue button-down, and an ivory linen blazer. His wavy blonde hair was longer now, pulled back into a low ponytail. He was reading the paper. My dad. He folded the paper and walked toward the back of the shop. I ran down the sidewalk to the coffee shop's entrance and pushed my way inside. My dad had disappeared in the crowd. I jogged to the back of the shop, frantically looking around. The black and white tiled hallway ended with the men's room on the left, the women's on the right. There was no other exit, which meant my dad had to be in the men's room. What are you doing? Scott asked from directly over my shoulder. I whirled around.
How? What? What are you doing here?
I was just about to ask you the same thing. I know you followed me. Don't look so surprised. It's called a rearview mirror. Are you stalking me for a specific reason?
My thoughts were too jumbled to care what he was saying. Go inside the men's room and tell me if there's a man in a blue shirt in there.
Scott tapped my forehead. Drugs? Behavioral disorder? You're acting schizo.
Just do it!
Scott gave the door a kick, sending it flying open. I heard the swinging of stall doors, and a moment later he returned. Nada.
I saw a man in a blue shirt walk back here. There's no other way out.
I turned my attention to the door across the hall, the only other door. I stepped inside the ladies' room and nudged each stall open one at a time, my heart up in my throat. All three were empty.
I realized I was holding my breath and let it out. I had several emotions strung tight inside me. Disappointment and fear at the top of the list. I'd thought I'd seen my dad alive. but it had turned out to be a cruel trick of my imagination. My dad was gone. He was never coming back, and I needed to figure out a way to accept it. I crouched down with my back to the wall and felt my whole body shake with tears. Chapter 5. Scott stood in the entrance, arms folded.
So this is what the inside of a woman's restroom looks like. Gotta say, it's a lot cleaner.
I kept my head bowed and wiped my nose with the back of my hand. Do you mind?
I'm not leaving until you tell me why you followed me. I know I'm a fascinating guy, but this is starting to feel like an unhealthy obsession.
I pushed myself to my feet and splashed cold water on my face. Avoiding Scott's reflection in the mirror, I grabbed a paper towel and dried off.
You're also going to tell me who you were looking for in the men's room, said Scott.
I thought I saw my dad, I shot back, summoning up all the anger I could to mask the stabbing pain deep inside. There, satisfied? I wadded up the towel and flung it in the trash. I was heading for the exit when Scott let the door drop closed and leaned against it, blocking me.
Once they find the guy who did it and send him away for life, you'll feel better.
Thanks for the worst advice I've received yet, I said bitterly, thinking that what would make me feel better was having my dad back.
Trust me, my dad's a cop. He lives for telling surviving family members that he found the killer. They're gonna find the guy who destroyed your family and make him pay. A life for a life. That's when you get your peace. Let's get out of here. I feel like a creep standing in the girls' room.
He waited.
That was supposed to make you laugh.
Not in the mood. He laced his fingers together on top of his head and shrugged, looking uncomfortable, like he hated awkward moments, let alone knew how to resolve them.
Listen, I'm playing pool at this dive in Springvale tonight. You wanna?
Pass. I wasn't in the mood to play pool. All it would accomplish was to fill my head with unwanted memories of Patch. I remembered that very first night when I chased him down to finish a bio assignment and found him playing pool in the basement of Beau's. I remembered when he taught me to play pool. I remembered the way he stood behind me, so close I felt electricity. Even more, I remembered the way he had always shown up when I needed him. But I needed him now. Where was he? Was he thinking of me? I stood on the front porch, rifling through my handbag for keys. My rain-soaked shoes squeaked against the boards, and my wet jeans rubbed a rash on the inside of my thighs. After tailing Scott, V had dragged me into several boutiques to get my opinion on scarves, and while I was giving her my thoughts on a violet silk versus a folksy hand-painted one in neutrals, a storm had blown in from the sea. By the time we'd sprinted to the parking lot and flung ourselves inside the neon, we'd gone from dry to drenched. We'd blasted the heat the whole drive home, but my teeth were chattering, my clothes felt like ice painted on my skin, and I was still shaken from believing I'd seen my dad. I shoved my shoulder against the humidity-swelled door, then patted the inside wall until my fingers fumbled the light switch. In the upstairs bathroom, I peeled out of my clothes and hung them over the shower rod to dry. On the other side of the window, lightning pitchforked down through the sky, and thunder clamored like it was stomping on the roof. I'd been alone in the farmhouse through numerous storms before, but all the experience hadn't made me any more accustomed to them. This afternoon's storm was no exception. V was supposed to be here now, sleeping over, but she'd decided to meet up with Rickson for a few hours since she'd canceled on him earlier. I wished I could travel back in time and tell her I'd tail Scott by myself, if she'd make sure to keep me company at the farmhouse this evening. The bathroom lights flickered twice. That was all the warning I got before they drained, leaving me standing in shadowy darkness. Rain threw itself against the window, streaming down it in rivers. I stood in place a moment, waiting to see if the electricity would be restored. The rain turned to hail, striking the window panes hard enough that I feared the glass would crack. I called V.
My electricity just went out.
Yeah, the streetlights just died on me, slackers.
Wanna drive back and keep me company?
Let's see.
Not especially.
You promised you'd sleep over.
I also promised Rickson I'd meet him at Taco Bell. I'm not going to cancel on him twice in one day.
Give me a few hours, then I'm all yours. I'll call you when I'm done. I'll definitely be there before midnight.
I hung up and squeezed my memory, trying to remember where I'd last seen the matches. It wasn't dark enough that I needed candles to see, but I liked the idea of lighting up the place as much as possible, especially since I was alone. Light had a way of keeping the monsters of my imagination at bay. There were candlesticks on the dining room table, I recalled, wrapping myself in a towel and taking the stairs down to the main level, and pillar candles in the cabinets. But where were the matches? A shadow moved in the fields behind the house, and I snapped my head toward the kitchen windows. The sheeting rain spilled down the panes, distorting the world outside, and I stepped closer for a better look. Whatever I'd seen was gone. A coyote, I told myself, feeling a sudden rush of adrenaline. Just a coyote. The kitchen phone shrilled, and I grabbed for it, half because I was startled and half because I wanted to hear a human voice. I prayed it was V calling to say she'd changed her mind. Hello? I waited. Hello? Static crackled in my ear. V? Mom? At the edge of my vision, I saw another shadow slink through the fields. Sucking in a steadying breath, I reminded myself there was no possible way that I was in any true danger. Patch might not be my boyfriend, but he was still my guardian angel. If there was trouble, he'd be here. But even as I thought it, I wondered if I could count on Patch for anything anymore. He must hate me, I thought. He must want nothing to do with me. He must still be furious, and that's why he'd made no effort to contact me. The trouble with that train of thought was that it only made me angry again. Here I was, worrying about him, but chances were, wherever he wasn't worrying about me. He'd said he wasn't going to just swallow my decision to break up, but that's exactly what he'd done. He hadn't texted or called. He hadn't anything. And it wasn't like he didn't have a reason. He could knock on my door right this very minute and tell me what he'd been doing at Marcy's 2 nights ago. He could tell me why he'd driven off when I told him I loved him. Yes, I was angry. Only this time, I was going to do something about it. I slammed the home phone down and scrolled through my cell phone looking for Scott's number. I was going to throw caution to the wind and take him up on his offer. Even though I knew it was for all the wrong reasons, I wanted to go out with Scott. I wanted to give Patch the finger. If he thought I was going to sit home and cry over him, he was wrong. We'd broken up. I was free to go out with other guys. And while I was at it, I was going to test Patch's ability to keep me safe. Maybe Scott really was Nephilim. Maybe he was even trouble. Maybe he was exactly the kind of guy I should stay away from. I felt a hard smile cross my face as I realized it didn't matter what I did, or what Scott might do. Patch had to protect me. "Have you left for Springvale yet?" I asked Scott after keying in his number. "Hanging with me isn't so bad after all." "If you're going to rub it in, I'm not going." I heard him smile. "Easy, Gray, I'm just playing with you." I'd promised my mom I'd keep my distance from Scott, but I wasn't worried. If Scott messed with me, Patch would have to step in. "Well," I said, "are you going to pick me up or what?"
"I'll swing by after 7.
Springvale is a small fishing town, and most of it is crammed onto Main Street. The post office, a few fish and chips diners, tackle shops, and the Z pool hall. The Z stood one story high, with a plate glass window offering a view inside to the pool hall and bar. Trash and weeds decorated the exterior. Two men with shaved heads and goatees were smoking on the sidewalk just outside the doors. They ground out their cigarettes and disappeared inside. Scott parked in an angled slot near the doors.
"I'm going to run down a couple blocks and find an ATM," he said, killing the engine.
I studied the storefront sign hanging above the window. The Z Pool Hall. The name tickled my memory. "Why does this place sound familiar?" I asked.
"Couple weeks back, a guy bled out on one of the tables. Bar brawl. It was all over the news."
"Oh. I'll come with you," I offered quickly. He swung out and I followed suit.
"Nah," he called over the rain. "You'll get soaked. Wait inside. I'll be back in 10.
Without giving me another chance to tag along, he hunched his shoulders against the rain, shoved his hands in his pockets, and jogged down the sidewalk. Slicking rain off my face, I tucked myself under the building's overhang and summed up my options. I could go inside alone, or I could wait here for Scott. I hadn't waited 5 seconds before my skin started to itch. While the sidewalk held little foot traffic, it wasn't completely desolate. Those who were out in the weather wore flannel shirts and work boots. They looked bigger, tougher, meaner than the men who loitered around Main Street in Coldwater. A few gave me eyes as they passed. I looked down the sidewalk in the direction Scott had taken off and saw him round the building and disappear down the side alley. My first thought was that he was going to have a hard time finding an ATM in the alley next to the Z. My second thought was that maybe he'd lied to me. Maybe he wasn't going in search of an ATM after all. But then, what was he doing in an alley out in the rain? I wanted to follow him, but didn't know how I was going to stay out of sight. The last thing I needed was for him to catch me spying on him again. It certainly wouldn't promote trust between us. Thinking maybe I could figure out what he was doing by watching through one of the windows inside the Z, I tugged on the door handle. The air inside was cool and coated with smoke and male perspiration. The ceiling was low, the walls concrete. A few posters of muscle cars, a Sports Illustrated calendar, and a Budweiser mirror offered the only decoration. No windows paneled the wall dividing me from Scott. I strolled down the center aisle, wading deeper into the shadowy hall, and kept my breathing shallow, trying to filter my intake of carcinogens. When I got to the back of the Z, I fixed my eyes on the exit leading into the rear alley. Not quite as convenient as a window, but it would have to do. If Scott caught me watching him, I could always feign innocence and claim I'd stepped out for fresh air. After making sure no one was watching, I opened the door and stuck my head out. Hands grabbed the collar of my jean jacket, yanked me out, and backed me against the brick exterior. "What are you doing here?" Patch demanded. Rain hissed down behind him, spilling off the metal awning. "Playing pool," I stammered, my heart still frozen from the surprise of being ripped off my feet. "Playing pool," he repeated, not sounding even close to buying it. "I'm here with a friend, Scott Parnell." His expression hardened. "Do you have a problem with that?" I shot back. "We broke up, remember? I can go out with other guys if I want." I was angry, at the archangels, at fate, at consequences. I was angry for being here with Scott, not Patch. And I was angry at Patch for not pulling me into his arms and telling me he wanted to put everything that had happened to us in the past 24 hours behind him. Everything dividing us was washed away, and it was just me and him from now on. Patch dropped his gaze to the ground and pinched the bridge of his nose. I could tell he was summoning patience from deep within. "Scott's Nephilim, a first-generation purebred, just like Chauncey was." I blinked. It was true then. "Thanks for the info, but I already suspected." He made a disgusted gesture. "Quit with the bravery act. He's Nephilim." "Every Nephil isn't Chauncey Langer," I said testily. "Every Nephil isn't evil. If you'd give Scott a chance, you'd see he's actually quite..."
"Scott isn't any old Nephil," Patch said, cutting me off. "He belongs to a Nephilim blood society that has been growing in power. The society wants to free Nephilim from bondage to fallen angels during Heshvan. They're recruiting members like crazy to fight back against fallen angels, and a turf war is brewing between the two sides. If the society becomes powerful enough, fallen angels will back off and start relying on humans as their vassals instead."
I bit my lip and looked up at him uneasily. Without wanting to, I remembered last night's dream. Heshvan, Nephilim, fallen angels. I couldn't escape any of it. "Why don't fallen angels usually possess humans?" I asked. "Why do they choose Nephilim?"
"Human bodies aren't as strong or resilient as Nephilim bodies," Patch replied. "A 2-week-long possession will kill them. Tens of thousands of humans would die every Heshvan." "And it's a lot harder to possess a human," he continued. "Fallen angels can't force humans to swear fealty. They have to convince them to turn over their bodies. That takes time and persuasion. Human bodies also deteriorate faster. Not many fallen angels want to go to the trouble of possessing a human body if it could be dead in a week."
A shiver of foreboding crept through me, but I said, "That's a sad story, but it's hard to blame Scott or any Nephilim for that matter. I wouldn't want a fallen angel taking control of my body 2 weeks out of every year either. This doesn't sound like a Nephilim problem. It sounds like a fallen angel problem." A muscle in his jaw jumped.
"The Z isn't your kind of place. Go home."
"I just got here."
"Bose is mild compared to this place."
"Thanks for the tip, but I'm not really in the mood to hang out at home all night feeling sorry for myself." Patch folded his arms and studied me.
"You're putting yourself in danger to get back at me?" he guessed. "In case you forgot, I'm not the one who called things off."
"Don't flatter yourself. This isn't about you." Patch dug in his pocket for his keys.
"I'm taking you home."
His tone told me I was a huge inconvenience, and that if he saw any way around it, he'd gladly opt out. "I don't want a ride. I don't need your help." He laughed, but the sound lacked humor.
"You're getting in the Jeep, even if I have to drag you inside, because you're not staying here. It's too dangerous."
"You can't order me around." He merely looked at me.
"And while you're at it, you're going to stop hanging out with Scott."
I felt my anger bubbling up. How dare he assume I was weak and helpless? How dare he try to control me by telling me where I could and couldn't go, and who I could spend time with? How dare he act like I'd meant nothing to him? I sent him a look of cool defiance. "Don't do me any more favors. I never asked, and I don't want you as my guardian angel anymore." Patch stood over me, and a drop of rain slid from his hair, landing like ice on my collarbone. I felt it slide along my skin, disappearing beneath the neckline of my shirt. His eyes followed the raindrop, and I began to quiver on the inside. I wanted to tell him I was sorry for everything I'd said. I wanted to tell him I didn't care about Marcy or what the archangels thought. I cared about us. But the cold, hard truth was nothing I said or did could realign the stars. I couldn't care about us. Not if I wanted to keep Patch close. Not if I didn't want him banished to hell. The more we fought, the easier it was to get swallowed up in hatred and convince myself that he meant nothing to me, and that I could move on without him. "Take it back," Patch said, his voice low. I couldn't bring myself to look at him, and I couldn't bring myself to take it back. I tipped my chin up and pinned my eyes on the blur of rain over his shoulder. Damn my pride, and damn his, too!
"Take it back, Nora," Patch repeated more firmly.
"I can't do the right thing with you in my life," I said, hating myself for allowing my chin to tremble. "This will be easier on everyone if we just... I want a clean break. I've thought this through." I hadn't. I hadn't thought this through at all. I hadn't meant to say these words. But a small, horrible, and despicable part of me wanted Patch to hurt as much as I was hurt. "I want you out of my life, all the way." After a heavy beat of silence, Patch reached around me and shoved something deep into the back pocket of my jeans. I couldn't tell whether I'd imagined that his hand had stayed there a half beat longer than necessary.
"Cash," he explained. "You're going to need it."
I dug the money out. "I don't want your money." When he didn't take the outstretched wad of cash, I slapped it against his chest, meaning to brush past him as I did, but Patch caught my hand, trapping it against his body.
"Take it."
The tone of his voice told me I knew nothing. I didn't understand him or his world. I was a stranger, and I'd never fit in.
"Half the guys in there are carrying some form of weapon. If anything happens, throw the money on the table and head for the doors. Nobody's going to follow you with a pile of cash up for grabs."
I remembered Marcy. Was he suggesting that someone might try to knife me? I nearly laughed. Did he honestly think that would scare me? Whether I wanted him as my guardian angel was irrelevant. The fact of the matter was, nothing I said or did would change his duty. He had to keep me safe. The fact that he was here right now proved it. He released my hand and tugged on the door handle, the muscles along his arm rigid. The door closed behind him, quaking on its hinges. Chapter 6. I found Scott leaning on his pool stick at a table near the front. He was studying a spread of billiard balls when I walked up. "Find an ATM?" I asked, tossing my damp jean jacket on a metal folding chair pushed up against the wall.
"Yeah, but not before I swallowed 10 gallons of rain."
He lifted the Hawaiian hat and shook out the water for emphasis. Maybe he'd found an ATM, but not until after he'd finished whatever it was he'd been doing in the side alley. And as much as I would have liked to know what that was, I probably wasn't going to find out anytime soon. I'd missed my chance when Patch had pulled me away to tell me I was in over my head here at the Z and should run along home. I spread my hands on the lip of the pool table and leaned in casually, hoping I looked completely in my element. But the truth was, my heart rate was high. Not only had I just come off a confrontation with Patch, but no one in the near vicinity looked remotely friendly. And try as I might, I couldn't sweep away the memory that someone had bled out on one of the tables. Was it this one? I pushed up from the table and brushed my hands clean.
"We're just about to start a game," Scott said. $50 and you're in. Grab a cue."
I wasn't in the mood to play and would have preferred watching, but a quick scan of the room revealed that Patch was seated at a poker table in the back. Even though his body wasn't directly facing mine, I knew he was watching me. He was watching everyone in the room. He never went anywhere without making a careful and detailed assessment of his surroundings. Knowing this, I tried on the most dazzling smile I had inside me at the moment. I'd love to. I didn't want Patch to know how upset I was, how much I was hurting. I didn't want him to think I wasn't having a good time with Scott. But before I could head over to the rack, a short man in wire glasses and a sweater vest came up beside Scott. Everything about him looked out of place. He was groomed, his pants were pressed, and his loafers were polished. He asked Scott in a voice almost too muted to hear, "How much?"
50, Scott answered with a touch of annoyance.
"Same as always."
"The game has 100 minimum."
"Since when?"
"Let me rephrase. For you, it has 100 minimum." Scott went red in the face, reached for his drink on the table's edge, and tipped it back. Then he retrieved his wallet and crammed a wad of cash into the front pocket of the man's shirt.
"There's 50. I'll pay the other half after the game. Now get your bad breath out of my face so I can concentrate."
The short man tapped a pencil against his bottom lip. "You're going to have to settle your account with Dew first. He's getting impatient. He's been generous with you, and you haven't returned the favor."
"Tell him I'll have the money by the end of the night."
That line wore out its welcome a week ago. Scott stepped closer, crowding the man's space.
"I'm not the only guy here who owes Dew a little. But you're the one he's worried won't pay him back."
The short man pulled out the cash Scott had tucked in his pocket and let the bills flutter to the ground. "Like I said, Dew's getting restless." He gave Scott a meaningful raise of his eyebrows and walked off.
"How much do you owe Dew?" I asked Scott. He glared at me.
"Okay, next question."
"What's the competition like?"
I spoke in hushed tones as I eyed the other players scattered around the various pool tables. 2 out of every 3 were smoking. 3 out of every 3 had tattoos of knives, guns, and various other weaponry climbing their arms. Any other night and I might have been scared, or at the very least uncomfortable, but Patch was still in the corner. As long as he was here, I knew I was safe.
Scott snorted.
"These guys are amateurs. I could beat them on my worst day. My real competition isn't there."
He shifted his gaze toward a corridor that branched off from the main area. The corridor was narrow and dim and led to a room that glowed a luminous orange. A curtain of beads hung across the doorway. One intricately carved pool table sat just back from the entrance.
"That's where the big money plays?" I guessed.
"Back there, I could make in one game what I make in 15 out here."
Out of the corner of my eye, I saw Patch's gaze flick to me. Pretending not to notice, I reached into my back pocket and took a step closer to Scott. "You need 100 total for the next game, right? Here's 50, I said, quickly counting the 2 20s and 10 Patch had given me. I wasn't a big fan of gambling, but I wanted to prove to Patch that the Z wasn't going to eat me alive and spit me out. I could fit in, or at least not get pushed around. And if it looked like I was flirting with Scott in the process, so be it.
"Screw you," I thought across the room, even though I knew Patch couldn't hear me.
Scott looked between me and the money in my hand.
"Is this a joke?"
"If you win, we'll split the profit."
Scott considered the money with a lust that caught me off guard. He needed the money. He wasn't at the Z tonight for entertainment. Gambling was an addiction. He swiped the money and jogged over to the short man in the sweater vest, whose pencil was furiously but meticulously scribbling numbers and balances for the other players. I stole a glance at Patch to see his reaction to what I'd just done, but his eyes were on the poker game, his expression undecipherable. The man in the sweater vest counted Scott's money, skillfully lining up the bills so they all faced the same direction. When he finished, he gave Scott a tight-lipped smile. It looked like we were in. Scott returned, chalking his pool stick.
"You know what they say about good luck. Gotta kiss my cue." He stuck it in my face.
I took a step back.
"I'm not kissing your pool stick."
Scott flapped his arms and playfully made chicken noises. I glanced to the back of the hall, hoping to confirm that Patch wasn't watching the humiliating scene unfolding. And that was when I saw Marcy Miller saunter up behind him, lean in, and cross her arms around his neck. My heart dropped to my knees. Scott was speaking, tapping the pool stick against my forehead, but the words went right past. I fought to recapture my breath and focused on the blur of concrete straight ahead to ground my complete shock and sense of betrayal. So this was what he meant when he said things with Marcy were strictly business, because it sure didn't look that way to me. And what was she doing here after having just been knifed at Beau's? Did she feel safe because she was with Patch? On a split-second thought, I wondered if he was doing this to make me jealous. But if that were the case, he would have to have known I'd be at the Z tonight. Which he couldn't have, unless he'd been spying on me. Had he been around more the past 24 hours than I'd originally believed? I dug my fingernails into the palms of my hands, struggling to focus on the pain there, and not the choked, humiliated feeling rising inside me. I stood that way, numb and holding in the thread of tears, before my attention was pulled to the doorway leading into the corridor. A guy in a red muscle tee leaned on the frame. Something was wrong with a patch of skin at the base of his throat. It almost looked deformed. Before I could take a closer look, I was paralyzed by a flash of déjà vu. Something about him was startlingly familiar, even though I knew we'd never met. I had a strong urge to run, but at the same time was overwhelmed by the need to place him. He picked up the white cue ball from the table closest to him and tossed it lazily a few times in the air. "Come on," Scott said, waving the pool stick back and forth across my line of vision. The other guys surrounding the table laughed. "Do it, Nora," Scott said. "Just a little peck for luck." He slipped the pool stick under the hem of my shirt and lifted it. I slapped the pool stick away. "Knock it off!" I saw movement from the guy in the red muscle tee. It happened so fast it took two beats of my heart to realize what was about to happen. He cranked his arm and hurled the cue ball across the room. An instant later, the mirror hanging on the far wall shattered, shards of glass raining to the floor. The room fell silent except for the classic rock playing through the speakers. "You," the guy in the red muscle tee said. He aimed a handgun at the man in the sweater vest. "Give me the money." He motioned him closer with a flick of the gun. "Keep your hands where I can see 'em." Beside me, Scott pushed forward to the front of the crowd. "No way, man, that's our money." A few shouts of agreement rose up from the room. The guy in the red tee kept the gun trained on the man in the sweater vest, but his eyes roved sideways to Scott. He grinned, baring teeth. "Not anymore. If you take that money, I'll kill you." There was a calm fury to Scott's voice. He sounded like he meant it. I stood frozen in place, barely breathing, terrified of what might happen next because not one part of me doubted that the gun was loaded. The gunman's smile grew. "That's so." "Nobody in here is going to let you leave with our money," Scott said. "Do yourself a favor and put the gun down." Another murmur of agreement circled the room. Despite the fact that the temperature in the room seemed to be rising, the guy in the red muscle tee lazily scratched his neck with the barrel of the gun. He didn't appear the least bit worried. "No." Switching the gun to aim at Scott, he ordered, "Get on the table. Get lost. Get on the table." The guy in the red tee was two-handing the gun, aiming at Scott's chest. Very slowly, Scott raised his hands level with his shoulders and scooted backward onto the pool table. "You won't leave alive. You're outnumbered 30-1. The guy in the red tee crossed to Scott in three strides. He stood directly in front of Scott for a moment, his finger poised on the trigger. A bead of sweat trickled down the side of Scott's face. I couldn't believe he didn't wrench the gun away. Didn't he know he couldn't die? Didn't he know he was Nephilim? But Patch had said he belonged to a Nephilim blood society. How could he not know? "You're making a big mistake," Scott said, his voice still cool but spilling the first drop of panic. I wondered why nobody made a move to help him. As Scott had pointed out, the crowd had the guy in the red tee outnumbered by a landslide. But there was something vicious and frighteningly powerful about him. Something otherworldly. I wondered if they were just as spooked by him as I was. I also wondered if the queasy and uncomfortably familiar feeling inside me meant he was a fallen angel. Or Nephilim. Out of all of the faces in the crowd, I suddenly found myself locking eyes with Marcy. She stood across the crowd with something I could only describe as bewildered fascination written all over her expression. I knew right then that she had no idea what was about to happen. She didn't realize Scott was Nephilim and had more strength in one of his hands than a human had in his whole body. She hadn't seen Chauncey, the first Nephil I'd ever met, mangle my cell phone in the palm of his hand. She hadn't been there the night he'd chased me through the halls of the high school. And the guy in the red muscle tee? Whether Nephilim or fallen angel, he was likely just as powerful. Whatever was about to happen, it wasn't a mere fistfight. She should have learned her lesson at Beau's and stayed home. And so should have I. The guy in the red tee shoved Scott with the gun, and he flew back on the tabletop. Out of surprise or fear, Scott fumbled his pool stick, and the guy in the red tee snatched it up. Without pausing, he leaped onto the table and held the pool stick pointed down at Scott's face. He drilled the stick into the table an inch from Scott's ear. The pool stick went down with such force it smashed through the felt surface. 12 inches of it were visible beneath the table. I swallowed a scream. Scott's Adam's apple quivered. "You're crazy, man," he said. Suddenly a barstool flew through the air, knocking the guy in the red tee sideways. He caught his balance but had to jump off the table to keep it. "Get him!" someone in the crowd shouted. Something like a war cry went up, and more people grabbed for barstools. I went down on my hands and knees and looked through the forest of legs for the nearest exit. A few bodies away, there was a guy with a gun holstered in an ankle strap. He reached for it, and a moment later the splintering sound of shots rang out. What followed was not silence, but more mayhem, swearing, shouting, and fists hammering into flesh. I got to my feet and ran in a crouch toward the back door. I just slipped through the exit when someone hooked the waistband of my jeans and hauled me upright. "Patch, take the Jeep," he ordered, shoving his car keys into my hand. A hasty pause. "What are you waiting for?" My eyes teared up, but I angrily blinked them away. "Quit acting like I'm a huge inconvenience. I never asked for your help."
"I told you not to come tonight. You wouldn't be an inconvenience if you'd listened. This isn't your world, it's mine. You're so bent on proving you can handle it that you're going to do something stupid and get yourself killed."
I resented that, and opened my mouth to say so.
"The guy in the red shirt is Nephilim," Patch said, cutting me out of the conversation. "The branding mark means he's in deep with the Blood Society I told you about earlier. He's sworn allegiance to them."
"Branding mark?
Near his collarbone?"
The deformity was from a branding? I shifted my eyes to the small window set in the door. Inside, bodies swarmed over the pool tables, punches being thrown in every direction. I didn't see the guy in the red tee anymore, but now I understood why I'd recognized him. He was Nephilim. He'd reminded me of Chauncey in a way Scott hadn't even come close to. I wondered if this could somehow mean that, like Chauncey, he was evil. And Scott was not. A loud noise seemed to rupture my eardrums, and Patch yanked me to the ground. Fragments of glass hailed down around us. The window in the back door had been shot out.
"Get out of here," Patch said, pushing me in the direction of the street.
I turned back. "Where are you going?"
"Marcy's still inside. I'll get a ride with her."
My lungs seemed to lock, no air going in or out.
"What about me? You're my guardian angel."
Patch sliced his eyes into mine.
"Not anymore, angel."
Before I could argue back, he slipped through the door, vanishing into the mayhem. Out on the street, I unlocked the Jeep, jerked the seat forward, and floored it out of the parking space. He wasn't my guardian angel anymore? Was he serious? All because I'd told him that's how I wanted it? Or had he said it to scare me, to make me regret saying I didn't want him? Well, if he wasn't my guardian, it was because I was trying to do the right thing. I was trying to make this easier on both of us. I was trying to keep him safe from the archangels. I told him exactly why I'd done it, and he was hanging it over my head as if this whole mess was somehow my fault. As if this was what I wanted. This was more his fault than mine. I had the urge to run back and tell him I wasn't helpless. I wasn't a pawn in his big, bad world, and I wasn't blind. I could see well enough to know something was going on between him and Marcy. In fact, I was now all but certain something was. Forget it. I was better off without him. He was slime. A jerk. An untrustworthy jerk. I didn't need him. For anything. I rolled the Jeep to a stop in front of the farmhouse. My legs were still trembling, and my breath rattled a little when I exhaled. I was acutely aware of the quiet all around. The Jeep had always been a place of refuge. Tonight it felt foreign and isolated, and far too big for just one person. I lowered my head onto the steering wheel and cried. I didn't think about Patch driving Marcy home in her car. I just let the hot air from the vents rush over my skin and breathed in the scent of Patch. I sat that way, hunched and sobbing, until the needle on the gas gauge dropped half a bar. I dabbed my eyes dry and let go of a long, troubled sigh. I was just about to shut off the engine when I saw Patch standing on the porch, leaning on one of the support beams. For a moment I thought he'd come to check on me, and tears of relief sprang to my eyes. But I was driving his Jeep. he'd most likely come to take it back. After the way he'd treated me tonight, I couldn't believe there was any other reason. He walked down the driveway and opened the driver's side door.
"You okay?"
I nodded stiffly. I would have said yes, but my voice was still hiding out in the vicinity of my stomach. The cold-eyed Nafeel was fresh in my thoughts, and I couldn't stop wondering what had happened after I left the Z. Had Scott gotten out? Had Marcy? Of course she had. Patch had seemed bent on making sure of it. "Why did the Nafeel in the red shirt want money?" I asked, climbing sideways into the passenger seat. It was still sprinkling, and even though I knew Patch couldn't feel the damp chill of the rain, it felt somehow wrong to leave him standing in it. After a count, he got behind the wheel, closing us into the Jeep together. Two nights ago, the gesture would have felt intimate. Now it just felt tense and awkward.
"He was fundraising for the Nephilim Blood Society. I wish I had a better idea of what they're planning. If they need money, it's most likely for resources. Either that or to buy off fallen angels. But how, who, and why, I don't know."
He shook his head. "I need someone on the inside. For the first time, being an angel puts me at a disadvantage. They're not going to let me within a mile of the operation." For a split second, it occurred to me that he could be asking for my help, but I was hardly Nephilim. I had an infinitesimal amount of Nephilim blood running through my veins that could be traced back over 400 years to my Nephilim ancestor Chauncey Langer. For all intents and purposes, I was human. I wasn't getting on the inside any faster than Patch. I said, "You said Scott and the Nafeel in the red shirt are both part of the Blood Society, but they didn't seem to know each other. Are you sure Scott's involved?"
"He's involved."
"Then how could they not know each other?"
"My best guess right now is that whoever's running the society is separating the individual members to keep them in the dark. Without solidarity, the chances of a coup are low. More than that, if they don't know how strong they are, the Nephilim can't leak that information to the enemy. Fallen angels can't get information if the society members themselves know nothing."
Digesting this, I wasn't sure whose side I was on. Part of me abhorred the idea of fallen angels possessing the bodies of Nephilim every Keshvan. A less noble part of me was grateful they were targeting Nephilim and not humans. Not me. Not anyone I loved. "And Marcy?" I said, trying to keep my voice neutral.
"She likes poker," Patch said noncommittally. He put the Jeep in reverse. "I should be going. You going to be okay tonight? Is your mom gone?"
I turned in the seat to face him. "Marcy had her arms around you."
"Marcy's sense of personal space is non-existent."
"So you're an expert on Marcy now?" His eyes darkened, and I knew I wasn't supposed to go there, but I didn't care. I was so going there. "What's going on between the two of you? What I saw didn't look like business."
"I was in the middle of a game when she came up behind me. It's not the first time a girl has done that, and it probably won't be the last."
"You could have pushed her away."
"She had her arms around me one moment, and the next moment the Nephil threw the cue ball. I wasn't thinking about Marcy. I ran outside to check the perimeter in case he wasn't alone."
"You went back for her."
"I wasn't going to leave her there."
I stayed in my seat a moment, the knot in my stomach so tight it hurt. What was I supposed to think? Had he gone back for Marcy out of courtesy, a sense of duty, or something entirely different and much more worrisome? I had a dream about Marcy's dad last night. I wasn't even sure why I'd said it, possibly to communicate to Patch that my pain was so raw it had even entered my dreams. I'd once read that dreams are a way of reconciling what's happening in our lives, and if that was true, my dream was definitely telling me I hadn't come to terms with whatever was going on between Patch and Marcy. Not if I was dreaming about fallen angels and Heshvan. Not if I was dreaming about Marcy's father.
"You dreamed about Marcy's dad?"
Patch's voice was as calm as ever, but something in the way he looked sharply at me made me think he was surprised by this news. Maybe even disconcerted. "I think I was in England, a long time ago. Marcy's dad was being chased through a forest. Only he couldn't get away because his cape got tangled in the trees. He kept saying a fallen angel was trying to possess him." Patch pondered this a moment. Once again, his silence told me I'd said something that interested him, but I couldn't guess what. He glanced at his watch.
"Need me to walk through the house?"
I gazed up at the dark, vacant windows of the farmhouse. The combination of nightfall and drizzling rain cast a gloomy, uninviting feeling all around. I couldn't tell which was less appealing, going inside alone or sitting out here with Patch, scared he might be moving on, to Marcy Miller. I'm hesitating because I don't want to get wet. Besides, you obviously have somewhere to be. I pushed on the door and swung one leg out. That and our relationship is over. You don't owe me any favors. We locked eyes. I'd said it to hurt him, but I was the one with the lump in my throat. Before I could say something that would slice deeper, I dashed for the porch, holding my arms over my head to shield my hair from the rain. Inside, I leaned against the front door and listened to Patch drive away. My vision smeared with tears, and I closed my eyes. I wished Patch would come back. I wanted him here. I wanted him to pull me against him and kiss away the cold, empty feeling slowly freezing me from the inside out. But the sound of tires skimming over the wet road outside never came. Without warning, the unbidden memory of our last night together before everything collapsed drifted up from my memory. I automatically started to block it. The trouble was, I wanted to remember. I needed some way to still have Patch close. Dropping my guard, I let myself feel his mouth on mine. Light at first, then more serious. I felt his body, warm and solid, against mine. His hands were at the nape of my neck, fastening his silver chain. He promised to love me forever. I turned the deadbolt, dissolving the memory with a click. Screw him. I'd keep saying the words as many times as it took. In the kitchen, the lights answered at the flip of a switch, and I was relieved to find the electricity up and running. The phone was blinking red, and I played the messages. Nora, my mom's voice said, we're getting tons of rain here in Boston, and they've decided to reschedule the rest of the auctions. I'm headed home and should be there by 11. You can send V home if you'd like. Love you, and see you soon. I checked the clock. It was a few minutes before 10. I had only one more hour alone. Chapter 7. The following morning, I dragged myself out of bed, and after a quick stint in the bathroom that included dabbing on under-eye concealer and spritzing my hair with curl revitalizer, I moseyed into the kitchen to find my mom already seated at the table. She had a mug of herbal tea between her hands, and her hair had a tousled, slept-on look, which was a nice way of saying she looked like a porcupine. Glancing at me over the top of her mug, she smiled. Morning. I slid into the seat opposite and shook shredded wheat into a bowl. My mom had set out strawberries in a small pitcher of milk, and I added both to the cereal. I tried to be conscientious about what I ate, but it always seemed much easier when my mom was home, making sure meals amounted to more than whatever I could grab in 10 seconds. "Sleep well?" she asked. I nodded, having just eaten a spoonful of cereal. "I forgot to ask last night," Mom said. "Did you end up taking Scott on a tour of the town?" "I canceled." Probably best to leave it at that. I wasn't sure how she'd react if she found out I'd tailed him to the pier, then spent the evening with him at a dive of a pool hall in Springvale. Mom's nose wrinkled. "Is that smoke I smell? Oh, shoot." "I lit some candles in my room this morning," I said, regretting that I hadn't taken the time to shower. I was sure the Z lingered in my clothes, my sheets, my hair. She frowned. "That's definitely smoke I smell." Her chair scraped back, and she started to stand, on her way over to investigate. "No use stalling now." I scratched my eyebrow nervously. "I sort of went to a pool hall last night." "Patch?" We'd settled on a rule not too long ago that I was absolutely not under any circumstances allowed to go out with Patch while my mom was away. "He was there, yes." "And?" "I didn't go with Patch. I went with Scott." By the look on her face, I was pretty sure this was worse. "But before you blow up," I rushed on, "I just want to say that my curiosity is killing me. I'm having a really hard time ignoring the fact that the Parnells are doing everything possible to keep Scott's past in the dark. Why is it that every time Mrs. Parnell opens her mouth, Scott is 2 inches away, watching her like a hawk? What could he have done that was so bad?" I expected my mom to jump to her feet and tell me that starting the minute I got home from school this afternoon, I was grounded until the 4th of July. But she said, "I noticed that, too." Is it just me, or does she seem scared of him? I continued, relieved that she appeared more interested in discussing Scott than my punishment for spending the evening at a sketchy pool hall. What kind of mother is scared of her own son? Mom wondered aloud. I think she knows his secret. She knows what he did, and he knows that she knows. Maybe Scott's secret was simply that he was Nephilim, but I didn't think so. Based on his reaction last night when he'd been attacked by the red-shirted Nephil, I was beginning to suspect he didn't know the truth about who he was, or what he was capable of. He might have noticed his incredible strength, or his ability to speak to people's thoughts, but he probably didn't know how to explain it. But if Scott and his mom weren't trying to hide his Nephilim heritage, what were they trying to hide? What had he done that needed so much covering up? 30 minutes later, I strolled into chemistry to find Marcy already at our desk, talking on her cell phone, completely ignoring the sign on the whiteboard that read, "No cell phones, no exceptions." When she saw me, she gave me her back and cupped a hand over her mouth, clearly wanting privacy. Like I cared. By the time I made it to our desk, the only part of the conversation I picked up was a seductive, "Love you, too." She slipped her cell inside a pouch at the front of her backpack and smiled at me. "My boyfriend. He doesn't go to high school." I immediately had a moment of self-doubt and wondered if Patch was on the other end of the line. But he had sworn that what happened between him and Marcy last night meant nothing. I could either stir myself into a jealous frenzy, or I could believe him. I nodded sympathetically. "Must be hard dating a dropout." "Ha ha! Just so you know, I'm sending out a text after class to everyone who's invited to my annual summer party Tuesday night." "You're on the list," she said casually. "Missing my party is the surest way to sabotage your social life. Not that you have to worry about sabotaging something you don't have." Annual summer party? Never heard of it. She retrieved a makeup compact which had worn a circle into the back pocket of her jeans and dabbed pressed powder on her nose. "That's because you've never been invited before." Okay, hold on. Why was Marcy inviting me? Even though my IQ was double hers, she'd had to have noticed the frost between us. That, and we didn't share any common friends. Or interests, for that matter. "Wow, Marcy, that's really nice of you to invite me. A little unexpected, but still nice. I'll definitely try to make it." But not very hard. Marcy bent toward me. "I saw you last night." My heart beat slightly faster, but I managed to hold my voice level. Noncommittal, even. "Yeah, I saw you, too." "That was kind of crazy." She left her statement open-ended, as if she wanted me to elaborate for her. "I guess." "You guess? Did you see the pool stick? I've never seen anyone do that before. He shoved it through the pool table. Aren't those things made of slate?" "I was at the back of the crowd. I couldn't see much. Sorry." I wasn't trying to be unhelpful on purpose. This was just one discussion I didn't want to have. And was this why she was inviting me to her party? To instill a sense of trust and friendship into our relationship, so that I'd tell her what, if anything, I knew about what happened last night? "You didn't see anything?" Marcy repeated, a line of doubt creasing her forehead. "No. Did you study for today's quiz? I have most of the periodic table memorized, but the bottom row keeps tripping me up." "Did Patch ever take you to play pool there? Did you ever see anything like that before?" Ignoring her, I flipped open my textbook. "I heard you and Patch broke up," she said, trying a new angle. I sucked in some air, but a little too late, since my face already felt hot. "Who called things off?" Marcy asked. "Does it matter?" Marcy scowled. "You know what? If you're not going to talk, you can forget coming to my party." "I wasn't going anyway." She rolled her eyes. "Are you mad because I was with Patch at the Z last night? Because he doesn't mean anything to me. We're just having fun. It's nothing serious." "Yeah, it really looked that way," I said, letting just enough cynicism seep into my tone. "Don't be jealous, Nora. Patch and I are just really, really good friends. But in case you're interested, my mom knows a really good relationship therapist. Let me know if you need a referral. On second thought, she's pretty pricey. I mean, I know your mom has this stellar job and all." "Question for you, Marcy." My voice was a cool warning, but my hands were shaking in my lap.
What would you do if you woke up tomorrow to find your dad had been murdered? Do you think your mom's part-time job at JCPenney would pay the bills? Next time, before you bring up my family situation, put yourself in my shoes for a minute. One teeny, tiny minute. She held